You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Our childhood shapes a great deal of how we feel about ourselves and view the world. Often struggles are hardships at a young age that give us plenty to work on throughout our lives. Typically, though, healing is getting to the root of pain. However, what if that root is too early to remember with your mind, but it's held within your body? Our next guest spent a great deal of life at war with her body. She is among generations of infants who prior to 1990 were largely operated on without anesthesia. The reason why, up until 1986, it was believed that infants weren't developed enough to feel or remember pain. But the medical community was gravely wrong, completely reversing course in 1987. And alongside that break from what is considered to be today an inhumane practice is growing awareness that trauma doesn't have to be consciously remembered to have a profound impact on your life. Wendy Williams has lived that journey and joins us now with her new book, Autobiography of a Sea Creature, Healing the Trauma of Infant Surgery. Welcome, Wendy. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
So this is something that I had no idea about. And in preparing for this conversation, I was searching for articles, and it's pretty sparse. You know, when you are searching for stuff, I found an article in the New York Times from like 1988, some other articles, but they were almost spread out by decades. Am I alone, or is this largely an unknown practice that really happened not that long ago?
It's largely an unknown practice. And it almost feels like a conspiracy of silence in a way. But it's hidden. And I think there's a lot of shame in the medical community. And I think they're embarrassed. I did talk to a pediatrician once who had done these PDA ligations, you know, opening your rib cage as for a preemie and doing difficult things on a baby without anesthesia. And she was completely embarrassed, ashamed, and deeply disturbed by her behavior like 20 years before. Mm-hmm. But I think things are changing now because the society is more trauma-informed and wants to learn about these things. And I think medicine's going to have to open up and talk about it. Honestly, I think they're going to have to share some of the data with the public.
Yeah, I mean, you share that you were born in 1952, so this is something that you carried with you, within you, for the majority of your life. When did you decide to write an autobiography about this?
Well, you know, I was 50 years old by that time, and I decided to write it because I had everything in my life that to be happy. I had a beautiful job. I had a beautiful wife. I had a wonderful piece of property here in El Dorado County. And why wasn't I happy? Why was I waking up every morning gritting my teeth as if I were in intense pain? And there was no pain. There's pain in my jaw because I was gritting my teeth. I had headaches. I sometimes had nightmares. I would absolutely feel dread upon waking. And there was no reason for it, because my life was going so well. So I thought, wow, I've done a lot of therapy in my life, but maybe I've never gone enough into this infant surgery issue. So I'm going to write a book about it to figure it out, because I don't want to live like this. Mm. Yeah. And so in the course of writing that book, I did go to UC Davis, Carlson Public, it's a library for medical research at UC Davis. And then I discovered this information about infant surgery. And not only did we not get anesthesia, we did not get pain control. So you're recovering from a surgery without anesthesia, and you also don't get any relief afterward. But you were given a paralytic drug. And so the paralytic drug was seen as anesthesia. And you were paralyzed, but you were awake. So this was shocking to me. And afterward, I was completely, I would say, freaked out. I came back to my land. I was angry, I was furious, but also I had incredible relief because I thought, wow, this is why my life has been such, in many ways, an up and down train wreck, a roller coaster. So I felt gratified to understand my life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you were not even a month old. You were 26 days old when you went into surgery for pyloric stenosis back in 1952. What is that condition?
Yeah, it's when you have a blockage between your stomach and small intestine, and it's a swelling, and none of the food can get through. So I was starving to death. I was starving for weeks. So when they operated, I was only 4 pounds. And I was misdiagnosed at first, because sometimes it's hard for doctors to figure it out because babies have colic, or, you know, maybe they're not latching onto nipples properly. But anyway, by the time they they had to do surgery. It was like an emergency. They had to rush me in because I was failing. It was a very, very difficult time for my family, you know, especially for my mom and for me.
I mean, yeah, because it wasn't just having the surgery. I mean, as I learn in the book, you know, there was uncertainty that you would even survive, you know, after the surgery for months. I mean, this was a near-death experience, but without conscious memory.
That's right. But you carry it. Mm-hmm. And so you live your life in a hyper-reactive state, and you're constantly what I call being haunted by symptoms over which you have no control or understanding. So in your life, if I might go into some of those symptoms, which is one was incredible recurring nightmares, terrifying nightmares, waking up sweating, feeling like I was going to explode. And these went on for many years between probably when I was 2 years, maybe 3 years old till I was like 8 or 9. There's a lot of hypervigilance, very big startle response, mm-hmm. frightened of everything. My life was all about protection. It wasn't about what do I want to do? What's fun for me? It's more about who can protect me? Where can I go? Where can I be safe? Too much of that. Everyone feels that. Of course, we all want to be safe. But this is, I mean, hyper kind of safe. Then there's lots of what do you call visual triggers. So I realized that I had, but you don't know what they are when you're a child. So a lot of times you're doing compulsive things to try to heal yourself when you don't understand that you even had a trauma. So at night watching TV with my parents, I would hold my breath and I would pretend that if I didn't hold my breath forever, I would die. And then I realized, oh, I couldn't hold it any longer. And then I'd let it out. And then I would feel a great relief. Now, this is very strange and odd, I know. But I think it has to do with the fact that I was paralyzed and was trying to understand the fact that my breath was interrupted. And I had always learned to breathe very shallowly. So I was always being deprived of oxygen. So this way, if I could hold my breath as long as possible and then let it out, and then I could take a deep breath finally. I got some relief. Now, isn't that crazy? Yeah. So you're living like this constantly because I could only breathe very shallowly because if I expanded my stomach as a baby, I would have had a lot of pain. But now the surgery's over, but I'm still living as if I will feel pain if I expand my stomach with breath. It's an insane kind of life, and I think a lot of... I've had a blog for 10 years. I have it now, but I had to stop because I had cancer. But I'm getting back onto my blog. But I have talked to hundreds of people who've been through some similar experiences between myself and Fred Vanderbaum in Australia. We have talked to hundreds of people. And we share, as I said, hypervigilance, but also we share addiction issues. So I've been, you know, addicted to smoking. I was addicted to food. I was drinking alcohol as a teenager. We also share, a lot of us, suicidal ideation. So I tried to kill myself 4 times, and 2 very seriously, but 2 not so seriously. But because you feel trapped in your body, you want out. The body is dangerous. You've never learned to find comfort in your body, and no one's taught you, and no one, my parents didn't understand that I didn't have anesthesia. They always thought that I had been given it. So when they talked to me about my surgery, they'd say, oh, you were fine. We were suffering because we had to watch you go through this, but you were knocked out. No, no, I was not. And my parents never understood that, so they couldn't learn to help me comfort myself. Mm. This makes sense.
Yeah, you bring up an important point that, I mean, of course you went through trauma, but so did your parents as well, you know, and they're humans too. And so that's going to shape the rest of their lives and also your relationship with them, especially when there seemed to be a big wall of kind of blocking communication to get to the root of the problem. At the heart of this is you writing a book. You wrote an autobiography, and you lead with this quote in your book that says, "Depression, I now believe, is linked to a complex story not yet written." And that's from Louise DeSalvo. How did writing help you throughout your life? Because you taught writing at Folsom Lake College. I mean, you just mentioned you live in El Dorado County. You have a master's in creative writing. So this is something that's been a part of your life even before you were aware of the roots of the trauma.
Absolutely. Well, writing saved my life. When I was 22 years old, in 1971 or two, I had a breakdown. And I had a breakdown because I had jaw pain from this incredible gritting my teeth every morning. And I went to see a jaw doctor, and he got me onto Valium, saying it was a wonderful pain reliever and didn't have any knowledge about the withdrawal symptoms or that it was addictive. So after having many symptoms and going through a lot of roller coaster in my life, a friend of mine said, that drug is poisonous. You got to get rid of it. So I threw it out. And I had a horrible withdrawal reaction, and then I tried to kill myself. Well, my friend said, Wendy, the way you're going to get through this is through writing. She said, if you can just start learning more about yourself and understanding yourself more deeply, you're going to get through this. So I took her completely seriously. I started to write a journal. I started to write poetry. And all through the 70s, I was actually living in Berkeley at some point, and I was at the Berkeley Women's Center. We had all these writing workshops, and all these women were discovering their identities together. And in a way, it saved my life, because those were the years when I was the most depressed. So reading and writing, those are the things, especially free writing, where you can just express and let yourself go. Those were the things that saved me.
I call it like stream of conscious writing.
Yes.
And it's always like, for me, like, I don't know where to start, or I get discouraged. But then once you start, you're like, wow, like it kind of just pours out of you. You know, we hold lot within us that we don't really fully understand, you know, because we're so busy going through the motions. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with author Wendy Williams about her new book, Autobiography of a Sea Creature, Healing the Trauma of Infant Surgery. What is the significance of the book's title, Autobiography of a Sea Creature?
Well, interestingly, it's taken from a Lucy Greeley book she wrote, Autobiography of a Face. She had cancer in her jaw as a child and wrote a gorgeous nonfiction book of essays about her experience. So I kind of took off on that. But the Autobiography of the Sea Creature part, you know, I decided to study marine biology because I thought I'm going to save all these creatures that Rachel Carson told us were dying, the pelicans from DDT poisoning. And early on in my life, I used to commune with horseshoe crabs along the Jersey shore. And horseshoe crabs are very strange. They've been here for hundreds of millions of years, and they haven't changed. So they look like miniature tanks walking on it. Anybody who's seen them gets freaked out. I thought they were quite ugly at first, but I learned to love them. And I would wake up every morning and try to save them because they'd flip over and they would die from heat exposure. So I would bring them to the water and put them in there so they would live. And I realized I don't think I consciously understood this, but I thought if they're ugly and I find them lovable, then I'm ugly with this huge scar on my stomach and I'm completely isolated. I don't know anybody else who has this kind of anomaly in their body. I must be beautiful too. I didn't think that consciously, but I felt it, like we were somehow together on this, me and the horseshoe crabs.
Beautiful.
So I did study marine biology, and I had a lot of experiences with creatures, and they helped me with my self-esteem development, honestly. Mm. Yeah.
At the root of this is pre-verbal trauma.
Yes.
You know, whether it happened, you know, without anesthesia during infant surgery or other forms of trauma as well.
Right.
If there is someone who thinks maybe this happened to them, but, you know, they obviously don't have the memory, they didn't have the communication, the verbal skills at that time, what should they do now as adults?
Well, one thing they could do is seek out EMDR therapy, which is an amazing therapy. It's called eye movement desensitization and reintegration. And it's a body-based therapy. And it's very important for people who have preverbal trauma to get help through a body-oriented therapy, not just talk therapy. And even it could be where the therapist also suggests perhaps yoga or some kind of body-based movement, dance, but one has to be engaged in that. So EMDR therapy would be helpful. Also, I want to make a shout out for this. It's called helpfortrauma.com, all one word, helpfortrauma.com. And this is Dr. Linda Gant. She is a pre-verbal trauma specialist. She and her husband, Lou, were amazing, a psychiatrist, and they had a a clinic in West Virginia that closed when he died, but she's training now therapists to help people with pre-verbal trauma. And you can go on that website and actually click and find a therapist. So again, that's a great resource. The other part which might help is that I do have a blog, and on my blog there's 300 posts where I talk, mostly talking about how I coped with pre-verbal trauma. And there's lots of resources on there, like reviews of books, reviews of articles, and stories of other survivors. So perhaps that might help. It's https://healinginfanttrauma.org. So perhaps that will help. And the last thing I want to offer is a film by Roy Schmuel, who had 6 surgeries before he was 2 years old without anesthesia. And he made a film to help everyone in the world understand infant surgery without anesthesia. And it's called Cut Down. But you would just go to cutdownfilm.com. And you can watch it for free on YouTube, and it's a 58-minute video. And I think that'll help you, because there's a therapist on there talking about preverbal trauma and the origins of preverbal trauma and how the brain is affected by it and how we heal by it.
When it comes to loved ones, as you mentioned, you have been married to your partner for many, many years. You also have friends and family who adore you. What should loved ones do? How have they helped you?
I think from being very patient. You know, my wife is a psychologist, and she knew I had PTSD before I did. And I think she had a lot of compassion, but she didn't talk about it. She just was observing it and patient. And so I think that others could benefit from that. But the other part that she said in this film, which I found interesting, that I talked to you about in Cut Down, she was interviewed for the film. She said that it's important for caregivers or friends to be themselves and to insist that you, the person who's suffering, be themselves as well. I think she was talking about not trying to rescue them, but kind of having patience with what they're going through and allow them to be. Perhaps that's the best thing, compassion. Compassion for the other person and for yourself as a caregiver, because it's intense. You know, Griffin would complain about my hypervigilance. And at one point she said, Wendy, after 40 years, or 35 years, Wendy, I may have to leave you if you don't go get help for your hypervigilance, because now that I'm older, I want to live in peace and I can't take the startle thing anymore. So please go get help. So I went and did EMDR and I healed myself.
Yeah, that patience. I mean, it can be so difficult, especially during emotionally charged moments in relationships, any kind, platonic or romantic. But also, I mean, when you're talking about nonverbal trauma and PTSD that you might not be aware of, like if someone's asking you, what do you need? I mean, you don't really know, you know, because you have to do that work on yourself. And that's why when it goes back to your wife saying, you know, not rescuing, but kind of just going through the process with them.
Yeah. Just being patient and kind of standing back a little bit. You know, you don't have to get in there and take care of that person. That person is very strong, but that person has to realize their own strength. And so perhaps by letting a person figure out some of the things on their own with your own support standing by, that's the best way, as long as they're getting support in their life, perhaps in therapy or somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, Wendy, in the last minute or so that we have.
Thank you.
What do you hope readers take away from your book when they close it and they finish the last page? Because you have seen this through the other side. You know, it can be resolved. You can get help. So regardless if you're going through this yourself or you're just someone interested in learning more, how do you want people to feel when they're done reading your autobiography?
Oh, I just want people to feel hopeful. You know, anybody over 33 years old may have had an invasive medical procedure without anesthesia or pain control. There's millions of people out there who do not understand why they're suffering. And I'm hoping the book is going to give them some hope, like, and recognition, like, oh my God, that's me. Or they can see parts of themselves of inside my book and go, I'm going to make it. I'm going to search out help. I'm okay. I'm strong. Look, she did it. I can do it. That's what I want.
Wendy, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Wendy Williams is an author sharing her new book, Autobiography of a Sea Creature, Healing the Trauma of Infant Surgery. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.